I'm just glad you stopped her when you did, Dorvin replied. And frankly, I'm surprised you could. I only saw some of what she was capable of. And... Dorvin let his sentence trail off.
We're all glad to be rid of her.
Luke felt a shudder of uneasiness roll through the Force. He looked back to Kip and found him glancing over at Kyle with a worried expression. Heart climbing into his throat, he asked,
We're not rid of her?
As far as we know, yes,
Kyle said, motioning for Luke not to get excited.
But we had an unusual report.
Who from? Luke asked.
Jedi Knights Aurelis and Sar,
Barata Kel replied.
They have been working in the Outer Rim, helping the slaves build free societies, yes?
Luke nodded.
Go on.
3 days ago, they were attacked by a tentacle,
Barata Kel explained.
It materialized out of the Force and attempted to choke Jedi Sar. When Jedi Aurelis ignited his lightsaber, it released Sar and turned to attack Aurelis, then just dissolved.
Sothias said it looked like it wanted to attack,
Octoramus added.
But it couldn't hold itself together. It vanished back into the Force.
Luke's semi-healed chest wound began to ache.
Any reports since then?
None,
Kyle confirmed.
We think it's whatever remains of Abeloth trying to coalesce around symbols of her hatred.
I think you're right, Luke said.
He could still feel her cold tentacle writhing in the emptiness of his chest wound.
A phantom memory reminding him that an entity of the Force could never be truly killed. That in 100 years, or 100,000 years, she would grow strong enough to return.
We're going to need to find a way to keep tabs on her. She may not return in our lifetime, but the Jedi Order will need to be ready.
To do what?
Kip asked.
To kill her,
Luke replied. He was thinking of the story of his father's trip to Mortis, of the special Force-imbued dagger that had been used to kill both the daughter and the father.
We need to find the Mortis monolith.
Master Skywalker, I hope you'll forgive me for asking, Dorvin said. But when you described the story Yoda told you, didn't you say the monolith was free-floating?
That's right.
Won't that make it rather... difficult to find? Dorvin asked. Even if you know the approximate coordinates.
And we don't, Luke interrupted.
Dorvin's face fell as he began to comprehend the truth of what Luke was telling him. That when it came to Abeloth, there were no guarantees. She might be gone for now, but someday she would return. And if the Jedi were not ready, the Destructor would finish what she had begun. As Luke watched the terror of this realization wash over Dorvin's face, he wanted to reach out in the Force and comfort the tormented man. To tell him that the Jedi would be there to protect him and Coruscant and the entire galaxy. But that would have been a lie. The truth was that Luke no longer knew what the future held, whether he and the Jedi were equal to the challenges ahead of them. All he could do, all that any mortal could do, was place his faith in himself and his fellow Jedi and do his best. The rest was up to the Force.
I wish I could tell you that Abeloth won't be back, Chief,
Luke said at last.
But the truth is, I just don't know. If the Jedi could have stopped her from coming to Coruscant the first time, we would have. I'm sorry we failed.
It's not your fault. Or the Jedi Order's, Dorvin said, waving the apology off. I know that, even if the Senate doesn't. Jaina arrived with a chair he had not asked for, a not-so-subtle hint that Luke was looking tired. Luke motioned for her to put it down in front of the viewport, but chose to remain standing for a few more moments.
So there have been rumblings about our failure to protect Coruscant?
More than rumblings, yes.
Barata Kel growled.
They have voted us off the planet.
Luke turned to Kyle Katarn, no doubt the most politically astute of the Masters present, for clarification.
The Senate has asked the Jedi Order to leave Coruscant?
Kyle nodded and glanced at Dorvin.
That was what Chief Dorvin was just telling us when you awoke,
Kyle replied. They need someone to blame for the apocalypse, and the Interim Caucus was very successful in pinning it on us. With enough votes to override a veto, I might add, Dorvan said. A certain coolness came to his force presence, not enough to indicate a lie, but enough to suggest that he was withholding part of the truth. I'm afraid all those BAMR slurs did have an effect on the Order's reputation.
Jevis Tyr has popped up again, Korn explained. He's on a pirate holonet feed, claiming that all the destruction is the result of an out-of-control spice war between the Jedi and their rivals.
And I'm sorry to say that the story has gotten a lot of traction, especially among the ambitious and unscrupulous, Dorvan said. There are a lot of hungry politicians out there clamoring for the Jedi to leave Coruscant.
We should consider the possibility that they're right.
Luke sat in the chair Jaina had brought over, then added,
Not about the spice war, of course, but about leaving.
Luke was hardly surprised when the only Force aura that failed to ripple with astonishment belonged to Wynn Dorvan. The chief studied Luke for a few moments, then finally raised his brow in an expression that seemed more curiosity than anything else. You would actually be willing to consider it?
More than willing.
As Luke spoke, Saba entered the cabin and came to stand with the other masters, dipping her head to indicate she had sent someone after Raynar. Luke nodded, then ran his gaze around the circle of masters.
In fact, I think it's probably best for everyone to have the Jedi withdraw from Coruscant.
Why? Korin blurted. The Sith came here because they wanted Coruscant, not because they were looking for a fight with us.
That's true.
Silgal's tone was low and thoughtful.
But we all know that the fight between the Jedi and the Sith is going to continue, perhaps for centuries.
And as long as the Jedi remain here, Coruscant will be a battlefield, Luke agreed. If we leave, the Sith can't hurt us by hurting Coruscant.
That doesn't mean they'll leave Coruscant alone, Kip objected. It's still the capital of the Galactic Alliance. They'll keep coming after it.
But not with everything they have, Kyle said, also warming to Luke's point.
As long as the Jedi are somewhere else, the Sith need to worry about a flank attack. It will change their tactics, and it will divert their attention away from Coruscant.
The Galactic Alliance isn't exactly defenseless without us, Jaina said, placing a hand on the back of Luke's chair. They have the largest military force in the galaxy. Chief Dorvan could propose a resolution that any attempt to infiltrate the Galactic Alliance would be taken as an act of open war. The Sith would be very reluctant to come after Coruscant again.
I think I can arrange that. Dorvan's voice was not quite smug, but it was relieved, and Luke knew that the Chief was getting exactly what he wanted.
The best thing for the Galactic Alliance.
He caught Luke's eye, then raised a questioning brow. Especially if I can sell it as the price of Jedi leaving Coruscant. Luke nodded.
Of course, he said. As long as you don't mind placing a couple of Jedi in your office to keep watch for Sith infiltrators.
They wouldn't need to be obvious, would they?
It would probably work better if they weren't, Kyle said.
Dorvan actually smiled. Then I think we have an agreement.
Not quite yet.
Luke raised a hand to hold Dorvan at bay, then glanced around the circle of masters.
Are we agreed?
The masters gave their consent, one after the other, some with more certainty than others, but all in honest agreement. When Luke came to the newest master, Jaina turned and looked out over the planet for a long time, then finally nodded.
Agreed, she said. It will be hard living somewhere other than Coruscant, but not as hard as seeing it torn apart in battle after battle.
Dorvan exhaled in relief, then stepped over to Luke's chair.
Thank you for not making this difficult, he said. It's not that we're ungrateful for all the Jedi have done and sacrificed, but with a whole world of Sith out there...
He let the sentence trail off, no doubt struggling to find the words to say what everyone in the room knew, that Coruscant had suffered enough.
There's no need to explain.
Luke rose and took Dorvan's hand with genuine affection.
You're going to be one of history's great chiefs of state. Go with the Force, my friend.
Chapter 36.
In the end, Lando suggested a compromise and arranged to replace the Falcon's missing cockpit with a customized replica. For Han, it still had the same seating arrangement and control configuration that had come to feel like an extension of his own body. For Leia, the yokes were mounted on telescoping shafts, so she wouldn't need to hold her arms at shoulder height whenever she took the helm. And the slave throttles had been moved closer to the co-pilot station to accommodate her shorter reach. But the best features by far were the new seats. While they looked like the same basic models that had come stock on the old YT-1300, they were fitted with the latest in-crew comfort systems, body molding flow foam, built-in heaters and massagers, integrated pilot alertness sensors that shook, buzzed, or even shocked at the first sign of slackening posture. In short, a pilot could spend an entire duty shift behind the yoke without growing sore or inattentive. And Han was beginning to think that that was a very good thing. The Falcon was sitting on the flight deck of the Super Star Destroyer Megador's executive hangar, looking out upon an entire brigade of void jumpers in full dress uniform. They'd been standing at parade rest for an hour, and judging by the alternating bursts of tense murmurings and nervous laughter rolling up the access corridor, they were going to be standing there for another hour. Han shrugged and tried not to feel guilty. The elite honor guard had been Gavin Darklighter's idea. A farewell salute and thank you gift for all the Solos had done for the cause of galactic freedom over the last 5 decades. It was also a subtle reminder that just because the Solo family would be living in another part of the galaxy, they still had friends in the Galactic Alliance, and Coruscant would always be their home. But Han had reasons of his own for wishing Leia would speed things up back there. First, it had been a long time since he had decked himself out in high boots and full first-class blood stripes, and he had forgotten how hot and itchy his formal pants got when he sat around waiting too long. Second, his wife and daughter weren't the only ones who were nervous, and the longer they took getting ready, the more likely it became that he would need to change his shirt. And a lot of people were waiting on them. That always made Han edgy. A flight of stealth X's flashed past the hangar mouth, their cruciform profiles silhouetted against Coruscant's pearly brightness for only an instant before they broke formation. They peeled off in 10 different directions, moving so fast that Han would not have been able to count their number had he not already known who they were. The 10 knights, heading out to find the Mortis monolith and the force-imbued dagger that had killed the ones. It was a lonely mission that Han did not envy the young Jedi. What little they knew about the monolith was the stuff of legend, and if Luke was right about Abeloth continuing to linger in the Force, one day the future of the galaxy would hang on their success. Once the last starfighter had vanished from sight, Han wished them a heavy dose of his Corellian luck, then tried to sneak a peek at the control panel chrono. Of course, Alana caught him.
Just be patient, Grandpa.
Dressed in an elegant white gown and wearing a gem-studded tiara in her golden red hair, she looked like the beautiful young princess she was.
They can't start without us, you know.
I know.
Han turned to face his granddaughter.
Alana, are you going to be okay with this? I mean, everyone knowing who you really are?
Alana cocked her head, and Han thought he saw a flash of hope in her eyes, a flash that vanished as quickly as it had appeared.
Do I have a choice?
She asked.
Not really, Han admitted. Now that the Sith know, it's only a matter of time until everyone knows.
That's what I thought,
she said.
It doesn't take a genius to figure out they won't keep the secret for long. And when your secret is about to be exposed, Mom says it's better to reveal everything yourself.
That's right, Han agreed. So it looks like it's your idea.
Alana smiled.
Bluffing rule number one. Always look like you're in control.
And you'll be in control,
Han finished. He paused, sighed, and then spoke in a quiet voice.
I guess it's official.
What?
Alana asked.
I've taught you everything I know.
Alana frowned.
Everything?
She asked.
That's pretty hard to believe.
Well, everything that matters,
Han confirmed. He let his tone grow serious.
Those are the 2 secrets to life, Alana. Keeping it simple and looking like you're in control.
Alana considered this for a moment.
And it took you how long to teach those to me?
Han shrugged, then smiled.
Keeping it simple is harder than you think.
He reached down to scratch behind the ears of Alana's pet Nexu, and was rewarded with a raspy rumble of contentment.
You're sure Angie's not going to have a problem with this?
Angie's smarter than you think, Grandpa. She understands that this is a big deal.
That's what I'm worried about, Han said. She might take the excitement the wrong way.
Alana let out a weary sigh.
Is anyone going to be shooting blaster bolts at her?
Let's hope not, Han said. What about the lightsabers?
Is anyone going to swing one at her?
I doubt it, Han said.
Then everything's going to be fine,
Alana said.
Trust me.
Han felt a sudden pang of joy and pride.
Well, if you're going to put it that way, I guess I have no choice.
Alana shot him one of her lopsided smiles, then said,
I was wondering if you were ever going to figure that out.
Before Han could protest, Angie's head popped up and turned toward the rear of the flight deck. Then C-3PO came clumping out of the access corridor.
Master Solo asked me to tell you that she's ready.
About time.
Han fired up the repulsor lift drives.
I was beginning to think she was changing her mind.
Out on the flight deck, Gavin Darklighter barked an order, and the Void Jumper Brigade came to attention and saluted. Han flashed the Falcon's landing lights in reply, then engaged the repulsor lifts and eased out of the executive hangar. He swung around beneath the Megador's bow and calmed for permission to depart the Super Star Destroyer's vicinity. To his surprise, it was Admiral Boitu himself who replied.
Permission granted, with our greatest reluctance and gratitude, he said. Safe journeys, Millennium Falcon.
As the Falcon sped across the handful of kilometers that separated the Megador from the Dragon Queen II, Jaina was surprised to sense herself growing utterly calm. With the entire Jedi Order relocating to its secret base on Shidu Maad, and the balance itself tipping ever deeper into darkness, she had expected to experience some amount of doubt today, or at least a little tingle of uncertainty. But she didn't. The closer the Falcon drew to the Dragon Queen II, the more confident Jaina grew that she had made the right choice, that she was following the will of the Force in what she was preparing to do. It was a wonderful feeling. Her stomach fluttered as the Falcon decelerated on final approach. A moment later, a series of loud thumps sounded from the lower hull, and the old transport groaned and hissed as it spun around and settled onto its landing struts inside the Queen Mother's privy hangar. Jaina's mother reached over and squeezed her hand.
Ready? I've never been readier for anything in my life.
Jaina straightened her dress. She had gone with a traditional white gown with a long train, then took the bouquet her mother was holding.
And I've kept him waiting long enough, don't you think?
Her mother cracked a smile.
It never hurts to be sure.
Alana and Angie came running out of the access tunnel, Alana holding up her skirts so she didn't trip. Angie, freshly shampooed and looking about as cuddly as a four-eyed feline with a mouthful of fangs could look. Alana took one look at the bouquet in Jaina's hand and smiled. She retrieved the basket of rosal petals she would be carrying, then took her place in front of Jaina.
Angie, on my left,
Alana ordered. Angie pounced instantly to her master's left side and stood motionless, now nearly as tall as Alana herself. Jaina's father emerged from the access corridor next, looking roguishly handsome in his high boots and blood stripes. He went to her mother and kissed her on the cheek, then stepped back and flicked a tear from beneath his eye.
I guess you couldn't talk her out of it.
Her mother's eyes grew wide.
Han.
He laughed, then turned to Jaina and offered his arm.
You know I'm only sore because he used to be the Emperor, right?
He was a head of state, Dad, not the Emperor,
Jaina said, taking his arm.
And he's over that.
He better be,
he said, smiling wider than ever now.
I won't have any daughter of mine raising little Imperials.
Not that it's your choice,
Jaina replied wryly.
But don't you think you're getting ahead of yourself? Yeah, Grandpa, stop rushing them,
Alana said, turning to look up at her grandfather.
They're not even married yet.
His brow shot up.
They aren't.
He turned to R2-D2, who was standing next to the boarding ramp control panel, and pointed a finger at the little astromech droid.
Maybe it's time to do something about that.
R2-D2 let out a joyful tweedle, then plugged into the droid socket and lowered the boarding ramp.
Wait!
C-3PO objected, rushing past the procession toward the ramp.
I'm not in position!
R2-D2 responded with a chastening whistle, causing C-3PO to stop at the top of the ramp and turn toward him.
Well, it certainly isn't my fault,
he objected.
You lowered the ramp!
The rest of the objection was drowned out by the fanfare of 100 Hapen Longhorns. Realizing that he was about to miss his cue, C-3PO turned and plunked to the bottom of the boarding ramp. From her vantage point, inside the passenger cabin, Jaina could not see much more than the deck upon which he emerged, but she could sense through the Force that there were hundreds of people gathered just out of sight, all looking expectantly toward the Falcon. C-3PO turned away from the ship, then spoke in a loud, regal voice that echoed across a cavernous space.
Your Royal Majesty, ladies and gentlemen, may I present the mother of the bride, Jedi Knight, former Chief of State of the New Republic, and Princess of Alderaan, Leia Organa Solo!
Again, there came a loud fanfare, this time accompanied by the applause of hundreds. Jaina's mother raised her chin and descended the boarding ramp, looking both elegant and beautiful in the plain white Jedi robe she had chosen for the ceremony. When she reached the landing deck, her brother stepped into view and offered his arm to her. Lingering long enough to peek up the ramp, even 3 months after awakening from his coma, or healing trance, or whatever it had been, Luke still looked pale and weak, and his pain was a constant dull ache in the Force. But his suffering did not diminish from the warmth of his smile, and Jaina could feel how happy he was for her. Once Luke and Leia had turned away and started up the aisle, C-3PO announced,
The first heir to the Hapen throne, the Chum Dar Alana Dejo Solo.
The longhorn sounded again, this time almost deafening in their volume, and the hangar erupted in thunderous applause. Alana cringed, then let out a heavy sigh.
I guess I'm going to have to get used to that.
Looks like it, kid, her grandfather said. But there is a bright side.
Alana craned her neck to look back up at him.
Really?
Sure, he said. You'll get to spend more time with your mother. And when you're on Shidu Mod training, nobody's going to applaud. They'll just yell.
Alana smiled.
Thanks, Grandpa, she said. That's going to be a relief.
With that, she clicked at Angie to follow, then started down the ramp, sprinkling rosal petals in Jaina's path. Once she had vanished from view, C-3PO announced,
Your Royal Majesty, ladies and gentlemen, may I present the bride, Jedi Master Jaina Solo, and her father, a former general of...
The rest of the introduction was drowned out by the fanfare of the longhorns and applause. Jaina could feel her father's pride warm in the Force, glowing almost golden in his aura. And not for the first time, she wondered if his legendary luck might not be due to just a touch of Force sensitivity. He squeezed her hand and smiled down at her, then cocked a brow.
What do you say, Master Solo?
He asked.
Is it time to make Jagged Fell the happiest man in the galaxy?
Jaina nodded, and together they descended to the landing deck, where Kip Duran was waiting at the end of a long double row of Jedi. Across from him, standing in a place of honor reserved for close friends who risked their necks ferrying Jedi into the Maw and who found ways to make impossible repairs to the Falcon, were Lando Calrissian and his family. Jaina felt Kip reach out in the Force. The two rows of Jedi raised their lightsabers and ignited them, forming a tent of crackling color over the aisle through which Jaina and her father were to pass. At the other end stood Jagged Fell, dressed in a dark civilian tunic and trousers, looking back toward Jaina with a smile as wide as his face. She returned his smile and, almost dragging her father along, started up the aisle to marry the man she loved. The darkness was eternal, all-powerful, unchangeable.
She had stared into it for too many years, alone and unblinking, determined that it would not take her. Now, it never would. Now, she was lighting a candle.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars: Fate of the Jedi, Apocalypse, by Troy Denning. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars: Fate of the Jedi, Apocalypse is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2012, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
This audio program is presented by Audible.com. Audible. Audio that speaks to you wherever you are.